It's showtime.
Okay, Tokyo,
South America,
Australia,
France,
Germany,
UK,
Africa.
Here we go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. Here we go, off and running for this 17th day of June, 2020. This is the Horn. Headon.live is where you'll find us on the interweb cubes. That's also your one-stop shop for all your podcasting needs. And Brother Deacon Asa asked me to pass this message along yesterday. I didn't get to it in a timely fashion, however. But let's see here. For those of you who have experienced podcasting problems, here's the simple solution. All you have to do is go to headon.live and subscribe on your favorite podcast platform that is noted there at the website. And that feed comes from what I upload to Podbean, and it works 100% of the time. Okay? There's not a lot in this life you can say is 100%. But this is. So if you're having any podcast problems, just go to headon.live and subscribe via whatever platform you're using. And Brother Deacon Asa is constantly looking for more and adding to it. But if you use a platform we don't have there, let me know, and we'll try to make that available too. Okay? I said, making Brother Deacon Asa's life more miserable. Well, sorry, Asa, but, you know, you started this. So that's the podcasting thingy. We are live on both streams and various and sundry other platforms. So here we are at midweek, hump day, downhill to Friday. And, yes, prayer meeting Wednesday on the Horn. Because, after all, I am Archpope, Uber, Rabbi, Ultimate Imam, Animated Animist, Antagonized, Agnostic, Vicarious, Vicar, Maximum, Metropolitan, Munificent, Mullah, Great Guy, Guru, and any other religious divine that you can think of. I'm that. And we will get to the prayer meeting Wednesday stuff in fairly short order. But there's a bunch of other stuff to go through, too. And, of course, gratitude, because this program begins always with gratitude, because you, the one out of 100 people who listen to this program, one out of every 100 people who listen to this program, keep this program on the air. And so, therefore, you are entitled to the top billing that you get at the beginning of every program. So thanks go out this evening to Labor Man and to Nancy, our 17th day of the month subscribers. We can always use new subscribers. If you'd like to be a new subscriber, just go over to headon.live. It's right there on the main page, you have the little form, and you click the box that says make this recurring or make this happen every month or whatever it is that it says, and you will be part of the merry little band of PayPal, Patreon, and a la carte contributors who make sure that this program is available for any and all who want it. And so we've managed to cover fundraising for one day out of three this week. We're done with Monday, We can get started on Tuesday, yesterday. Today, the fundraising goal stands at $400. And I will say again, because it's no joke, things being such as they are, it's going to take every penny we can raise this month just to get all the damn bills paid. And we're not even talking about contributing anything to Agnes's hot tub fund. It's tight. It's going to be tight this month because I've incurred new billing by bringing in more interweb while at the same time having to pay for the shitty old Frontier interweb until that contract is up. Yuck. So there's that. Now, where to begin? There's nothing, we could talk about the John Pornstash Bolton book. Probably will. I, for one, would not purchase it if John Pornstash Bolton came here and begged me to purchase it and or threatened to start a war with me. If I didn't purchase it, I would not purchase it. However, it does contain some interesting titbits about the Nitwit Nero maladministration. And we know that it is damaging to the administration because they are desperately trying to block its publication. That's the story. The story isn't, the other story is the fact that John Bolton is a shameless, shit-eating profiteer who cared more about his $2 million book advance than he did about the Republic when he refused to testify before the impeachment committee in the House. And then, of course, the Senate had no interest in hearing from him, or at least the Republican majority did not. Ugh. So, fuck him. Really. Sincerely, fuck him. But some of the things that he does, the accounts that he makes, and apparently has the receipts, are going to be problematic and embarrassing for some of the footpads, cut purses, highwaymen, sneak thieves, bootlicks, lick spittles, sycophants, and various and sundry other vermin who occupy the maladministration, and to his face will tell Nitwit Nero what a great guy he is and what a stable genius he is and how he has all the best words, and then talk shit about him behind his back. There's a lot of that, apparently, in the book. And here's the interesting thing. Months and months ago, I said that the most responsible thing that journalists could do, because they already had, I guess, galleys to it or something in their possession, would be to pull a Pentagon Papers and publish it before the apparatus of or the machinery of government could try to suppress it. Well, here we go. The Washington Post, the New York Times, and other major media outlets have the book in their possession in full, and they're teasing little tidbits of it out to the public, but not publishing it in full because they're afraid of John Bolton's lawyers. John Bolton and Simon & Schuster's, by the way. On the other hand, John Bolton's lawyers have their hands full because even as we speak, Attorney General Bill Pepe the Frog Barr is trying to figure out a way to prosecute John Bolton for either violating an NDA or disclosing national security secrets. Bear in mind, the National Security Council has been going over this tome for eons now, and at this point in time, they're just desperate to keep the American people from finding out, at least those of us who don't already know, what was the term that Rex Tillerson used? What a fucking idiot! Donald Trump is. And Donald Trump in particular is desperate to keep that from coming out. Because of all the people who know he's a fucking idiot, he knows he's a fucking idiot. But before we get into that or anything else, I wanted to share a note that I got earlier today. We have a magnificent, wonderful, caring community that we have built over the years here. And y'all have been the ones primarily involved in building it. I just sit here and talk. But I had a note from an individual who will remain anonymous. I will go so far. Well, I'm not going to just do anything to disclose this person's identity because they wish to remain anonymous. I'll say that this person lives in one part of the world that is a long, long, long way from where this person is from. And this individual, a dear friend, a supporter of the program, says, "It's been a while. I had to connect. My father passed away last week. Tomorrow is the funeral in the country where I was born, and I'm stuck here in the country where I live due to the COVID lockdown. I'm doing my bit by video and talking to cousins, very old uncles and aunts, etc. But it's painful not to be able to stand next to my mother when they close the coffin. I just finished writing my eulogy and wove the story around my father's toolkit. And then I heard you talking about your father's toolkit today. Then I heard your story with Scott about the anarcho-syndicalist commune on Fox, and I burst into such uncontrollable laughter that tears ran down my face. I've been busy calling, texting, and mailing with family, and it dawned on me that even though in the background, you, Scott, Todd, Tracy, Lady B, Billable Rick, and so many others rather feel like family to me too. I've been present only as a monthly anonymous subscriber, but I felt the urge to say hi to all of you. My heart hurts for the state of your union, but I hope that your collective fight and focus will bring about the needed change. This has to be. Otherwise, as Scott says, we're all screwed, Bob. Please know that you all are making a difference. Keep on. With my warm regards," and signed. That came in overnight. I read it first thing this morning, and it's been on my mind ever since. What a kind and warm and lovely thing to do in the midst of grief and loss to reach out to this community to let us know what we mean in our friend's life. I am touched beyond words. And I love the fact that that strange little energy that pervades this community congregation manifests its way in such manners as it does. The idea of our friend writing a eulogy and weaving it around a father's toolkit only to play the podcast and hear me talking about mine, it stunned me. It did. And so I thank you I thank you for sharing your life and your grief at this point in time with us so that we can share it in our hearts with you. Thank you most sincerely. Never doubt that with your emails, your calls, your participation on Friday on the front porch, never doubt that you are touching lives. This is not metaphysical or supernatural. It is simply the beauty that can happen when people of goodwill come together in collegiality and common cause. Thank you. Oh, and by the way, another one of those moments of kismet or whatever it is. A dear friend of mine in Louisiana posted a story today about going into their attic and seeing a snake coiled up there, and the frenzied attempt to get said snake out of said attic, only to see the snake slither away and go down into the insulation and probably into the walls. Hell, that wasn't even 7 days ago that happened here. It's beginning to mess with my head a little bit, whatever this thing is that happens with this community. So now there are Sam the studio serpent, and I guess Atticus the attic adder down Louisiana way, probably a third cousin by an old auntie, a great auntie twice removed or something. But it's a little bizarre. But I thought you would appreciate that that note, because it was as much to y'all as it was to me. So, and thank you very kindly to David for getting us started this evening. Hi, David, much appreciated. So we are a quarter of the way done with yesterday. Thank you, David, very kindly, and hopefully you'll have some company in short order, and we'll get this fundraising hole knocked out. Toot sweet. That'd be great if we could. Thank you, David. And that weren't a Steve in New York, not helping. That snake in the walls weren't no snake. It was a basilisk. Oh, well, that's just wonderful, Steve. You little ray of fucking sunshine, you. Scott in San Diego, Bolton's book. Oh, say no more. It's a Simon and Schuster project. Well, that means we can expect a segment or two about the book on 60 Minutes soon, since CBS owns that publishing house. No, they'd never do anything like it. Yes, they would. Of course they would. But I didn't think about that. Yeah, the Simon in Simon & Schuster at one point in time was the father of Carly Simon. Did you know that?
A lot of people don't know that, but now we do.
Oh, okay. Brother Deacon Asa says, no, Bob, it's the same damn snake. It's making its way up and down east of the Mississippi. Well, at least it can't swim, so that means it's not a water moccasin. Winning! Scott says, the lovely email from our hurting family member that he recognized the ultimate safe space that the Horn family is and shared so openly and beautifully just goes to indicate the special place in cyberspace Head-On Radio is. The other day, during my internet travels, I happened upon this quote by James Michener. I think it reflects perfectly the approach and attitude of you, Bob, and the members of the Horn family. Michener wrote, the person who is a master in the art of living makes little distinction between their work and their play, their labor and their leisure, their mind and their body, their education and their recreation, their love and their religion. They hardly know which is which. They simply pursue their vision of excellence and grace in whatever they do, leaving others to decide whether they are working or playing. To them, they're always doing both. Damn, that's a dandy, Scott. And it happens to partake of a considerable amount of truth. Meanwhile, Billable Rick is off and running now. Bob, stop telling us about the Simons. Simon says. You're awful, Rick. That's terrible, Simon says. I thought we were going to get a reference to the old San Diego-based detective show Simon and Simon. Subject line, name that basilisk. Bob, considering that the actors in Harry Potter are British, I thought the basilisk, the studio basilisk name, would be Bertram. Sounds like a good upstanding or side-slithering citizen of West Virginia. Remember to make sure that he and Stan, the state studio stink bug, get registered to vote. Signed, your buddy Dave in the blind. By all means, yes, let's register him to vote. I don't know if you realize this, but well, that's Agnes's maiden name is what that is, Bartram. Hence Bartram's Gardens, the farm place of her great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-grandfather there outside of Philly that Todd and I were talking about last night. Yep, that's Agnes's grandpappy. So that works even better. I had a note come in from Joey. Subject line, doggone democracy. Anyways, so I was watching my good friend Billable Rick's dogs playing together in the backyard yesterday on YouTube. I would have liked to have been able to meet Bella the puppy while she was still a puppy, but because nitwit Nerona decided that it was easier to ignore this pandemic than act like a responsible human being or president of the United States and handle the matter like Obama handled Ebola, who the hell knows when I'll get out to L.A. again and the pooches play. I found it ironic that Rick has rigged up a little water device for the doggies to get a drink from the spigot when they're thirsty. The pups just go over and push the spring-loaded spigots and water comes out. William, the older doggie, has taught Bella, the baby doggie, how to maneuver the masterpiece, and both doggies have water when needed, and then the spigot shuts off before too long, so water is not wasted. This weekend, I was watching Captain Commodus, the awful, decadent, brain-dead ruler from the Roman Empire, or in Trump's case, just Captain Commode, because he probably shits himself all damn day. I was watching Captain Commodus on the dais at the West Point graduation ceremony. Hey, West Point, isn't that where Mike Pompeo graduated first in his class? Yeah, it is. Hell, I'm surprised Mike Pompeo wasn't there just to introduce Captain Commodus to everybody. Hey, I'm Mike Pompeo, and I graduated first, blah, blah, blah. So while Trump's on the stump bellowing his bullshit, he all of a sudden needs a drink of water and has trouble picking up the plastic bottle and bringing it to his mouth. He looked like a big orange whale out of water, trying to get a drink. I compared that to Rick's puppies cleverly maneuvering the water spigot and thought these dogs might be more presidential than the president himself. Hell, at least they know how to drink water. All these references of water to water made me a little thirsty in my own right. I'll have you know I'm holding my water bottle with one hand. Got the screw-on lid in the other. It's a very bougie water bottle. Caught them on sale a year ago. Can't do without it now. Trump should know all about water because he's guiding the Trumptanic, and right now his ship is taking on a lot of it. And will soon be sinking on November 3rd, Christopher's birthday in Trump's Waterloo. Captain Ahab Commodus is way underwater in the latest polls as he's tied in Texas and losing in critical swing states. Watching these latest polls must be worse than water torture for this sinking sociopath. While watching the dogs, I noticed how William tries to nurture the novice baby Bella and teach her a few tricks. William watches Bella like a good daddy dog and is like a father figure to her. Unlike Trump, Bella, in her baby years, does not have to wear a diaper. William could give Trump a few lessons on how to be a good daddy dog, because I don't think Trump gives a damn about his son, Barron. I heard Trump tweeted over 200 times just this weekend alone. I wonder, did he even see his son this weekend, or does he ever connect with his son on any level at any time? Kudos to Melanoma. No matter what we may think of her, she's probably purposely keeping Donald away from his son, Barron, because She wants nothing to do with his father, and at this point I'm confident that she wants to make sure her son has nothing to do with his father either. Some say our democracy is going to the dogs. Well, in that case, let's hope it's to William and Bella. So on November 3rd, vote for the William and Bella ticket, and doggone it, you'll be glad you did. This has been Joey's Journal for Wednesday, the 17th day of June, with Giraffrey doing it doggy style. And let's see, 25 minutes into the program, and we're off the rails and into the gutter. Giraffrey doing it doggy style. Nonetheless, Billable Rick awards Joey a cowbell for his creative journal. Yeah. And so, that catches up with most of the email. Along the way, David in South Carolina stand with a note. The war crimes president. Bolton's book reveals that Trump shares Saudi MBS's affinity for murdering reporters. Trump suggested killing reporters, saying,
journalists should be jailed so they have to divulge their sources. These people should be executed. They're scumbags.
Ugh. Yeah, so like I said, the middle of the week looks like we're going to be busy. Maggie Haberman, stenographer for the New York Times, tweeting, the president has told advisors he wants to find and prosecute whoever let it be known that he was in the bunker, per three people familiar with what he's said. I don't think it's illegal to say that the president ran to the bunker. It's just embarrassing. Wow. Oh, and there's nothing quite like a little bit of erasure. It's noxious and hateful and real. So today, Kaylee McEnany came out to face the press and was asked a question about the so-called Gorsuch decision, that's what it's being called now, extending civil rights protections under the Civil Rights Act to the LGBTQQIA community. It's an interesting answer. Check this out.
Does the president think the Gorsuch decision is a win for civil rights?
So one thing I would say, I have not talked to the president about that personally, but one thing I wanted to read was from the Kavanaugh dissent. There were some real concerns that this was a complete distortion of how we do statutory interpretation.
Remember, Kaylee McEnany has a Harvard Law degree. With every word that comes out of her mouth, the value of a law degree from Harvard sinks ever lower.
Some real questions about how we do statutory interpretation?
Twit.
And Kavanaugh lays that out very nicely. But one thing Justice Kavanaugh did say, and I thought it was a very powerful quote.
Hold on. She's not quoting from the Gorsuch decision. She's quoting from the pissy, cranky, shitty little dissent that Brett Kavanaugh, credibly accused sexual abuser, aficionado of beer, and recipient of mysterious monies that paid off his mortgage, instead of from what actually constitutes the law now. Don't tell Kaylee McEnany, but dissents don't have any force or effect. In this case, it's just a fucking tantrum.
is notwithstanding my concern about the court's transgression of the Constitution's separation of powers, which was a grave concern as a separation of powers point that the DOJ argued in court, it is appropriate to acknowledge the important victory achieved today by gay and lesbian Americans. So I thought that that was a very good quote from Justice Kavanaugh.
How about that? Now, you'd have to go and pull up the dissent to see if that's actually what he said. But what's curious in that is that Kayleigh McEnany, who could actually benefit from a little bit of coaching from a team of drag queens, managed to erase the T part of LGBTQ. Gay and lesbian Americans. Because that decision also, of course, extended workplace protections to the trans community, no matter how desperately President Shitstain may hate it and hate them, because he does. There's always something curious about anyone who manifests such an irrational hatred for any group of people, and it's curious, more than passing curious, how much he despises the trans community. But Kayleigh, with her little cross around her neck, isn't that just precious? Managed to erase the trans community from one of the most important civil rights decisions in modern history, in the modern history of the court. Like I said yesterday, there was a trade-off, there was some horse trading. It was ugly, it was nasty, it was vicious, and it was dirty. But it cannot take away from the historic significance of that decision. We'll call it Bostock, not the Gorsuch decision, because it took six justices to make that decision, and Anne's boy Neil doesn't deserve to be catapulted into history that way. It's the Bostock decision. Don't be connived into referring to it otherwise. Stop telling us what not to be connived by. Beat you to it, Rick! But that's just ugly. It's just ugly. But then again, all these people around him are just ugly. And speaking of which, speaking of just ugly, Mike Pompeo, and I graduated first in his class at West Point. Golly Moses, that never fails to tickle me. He gets stung in Bolton's book. Ah, see, okay. Bob, stop telling us what you beat me to. Okay, Billable Rick. I knew he wasn't going to let that rest. Stop telling us I wasn't going to let that rest. This could just, and see, this is how chaos and anarchy are born. Stop telling us how chaos and anarchy are born. No, Bolton reports on a little incident that took place back when Geezer Disgustus was having his bromance with Kim Jong Bad Golf Pants. And among other things, during the meeting in 2018 with Kim, then, well, and now, Secretary of State Mike Pompeo, graduated first in his class at West Point, all that shit, you know. He passed a note, you know, because they're all seventh graders in that maladministration. He passed a note to John Bolton, which one presumes John Bolton probably hung on to because he's that kind of guy, in which Mike Pompeo, referring to the President of the United States, wrote, "He is so full of shit." Oops. The baby. Peter Baker writing his own lowdown of the Bolton text for the New York Times writes the following. The book paints, quote, a withering portrait of a president ignorant of even basic facts about the world, susceptible to transparent flattery by authoritarian leaders, manipulating him and prone to false statements, foul-mouthed eruptions, and snap decisions that aides try to manage or reverse. Drawing from the book, Baker continues, Mr. Trump did not seem to know, for example, that, you know, you might want to get the hockey puck for this. This is some pretty rich stuff. Mr. Trump did not seem to know, for example, that Britain is a nuclear power, and asked if Finland is part of Russia. Why not ask a Finn and find out the answer the hard way? It's worth remembering that the Finns whipped the ever-loving shit out of the Russians and sent them screaming back to the mother country. He also notes he came closer to withdrawing the United States from NATO than previously known. Even top advisors who position themselves as unswervingly loyal mock him behind his back. And a month after the note-passing episode, according to Bolton, Mike Pompeo, who graduated first in his class at West Point, dismissed the president's North Korea diplomacy, declaring there was zero probability of success. Now, what's interesting in all of that is that at the same time that he was apparently on the down low saying there's zero probability of success, Mike Pompeo was out talking about what a brilliant job the president was doing. This, of course, is because Mike Pompeo is an evangelical Christian. And therefore, practically every word that comes out of his mouth is a lie. Because it's okay. All he has to do is tell Jesus he's sorry, and everything's all good. How revolting is that? Well, it's revolting. And it's also real. Sheesh. Other stuff? Well, let's check in down South Carolina way. Check in on an employee of the Charleston County School District by the name of Kim Brown. Well, she used to be an employee of the Charleston County School District. Because Kim Brown went on a rant on her Facebook page, because they can't help it, these maggots. She was put on administrative leave Sunday, and then subsequently was just flat out fired. After taking to her Facebook page in discussion of Black Lives Matter and saying, "Well, I personally think if they don't like it here in America, give them a ticket back to Africa and see how they like living there." In point of fact, she didn't just put it on her Facebook page. She posted it to WCIV-TV's website this past Friday. What got her so worked up? Representative J.A. Moore, who had called for the removal of a monument to John C. Calhoun, the repulsive, disgusting pro-slavery senator, who declared that not only is slavery not a bad thing, it is a net positive good. You might recall that the campus of Clemson University sits on his old slave plantation. But it wasn't enough for her to say, they need to go back to Africa. She had to expand on her idea. I am so sick of all this BLM. Maybe if they were not criminals and breaking the law, they wouldn't have to worry about coming into contact with a cop. If they want peace and equality, then they learn to need to live here. They need to learn to live here and live with our history. Our history. So she got sacked. She had been an interventionist at Ladson Elementary, which I'll just bet you has some African-American children in it. Erica Taylor, the district's chief of staff, said, "We are extremely disappointed with the former employee's offensive and unacceptable message, and we think that our swift action this morning conveys our commitment to the district's values and principles. CCSD does not condone these types of offensive messages and apologizes for any harm caused by this individual's actions." It's a shame that I've got about a dozen of these kind of stories. Because I do. But there is some good news out of this. As David in South Carolina, Stan, just pointed out, the John C. Calhoun statue will be removed from Charleston, according to a notice from the city of Charleston. Yeah, stick him in a warehouse or stick him in a museum or something if you must. But it's not like he's not going to have it's not like he's being erased from history. Statues are not history. Statues are reflections of who we think were important. And the guy who tried to start a civil war 30 years before there was one is no one to be honored. In fact, it was John C. Calhoun, who at one point in time was Andrew Jackson's vice president, whom Jackson said that he would take a rope and get on his horse and ride to South Carolina and start hanging every secessionist he saw till he ran out of rope or ran out of secessionists. He was a vile, hateful, fecal manifestation of an attempt at a member of the human race. Disgusting. Mayor John Tecklenburg announced the plans during a news conference on Wednesday this afternoon. He'll send the recommendation to the city council for final approval. The statue is in Francis Marion Square in the city. And, of course, that monument was not put up in the immediate aftermath of John C. Calhoun's having headed off to hell. No, it was only put up in 1896 as a very tangible, visible reminder of white supremacy in that city. Meanwhile, over at his old slave plantation, Clemson University is asking that Tillman Hall be renamed, and the president of the University of South Carolina is asking to rename Sims Hall because those are both named for vicious, revolting, traitorous slavers. Progress comes a little at a time. And of course, the announcement of the removal of this statue was made today for a specific reason, because this, whether we realize it or not, is the fifth anniversary of the day that young Dylan Roof was taken by law enforcement officials to get dinner at Burger King. No, it's the, I mean, that happened too. It's the fifth anniversary of little white supremacist dirtbag Dylan Roof slaughtering people attending church at Mother Emanuel AME Church in Charleston. And remembrances have been taking place all day. Bye, John C. Calhoun, you old devil. But please, and I know I don't have to tell you this, but just be prepared in case someone in your life says, they're trying to erase history. Just tell them no. No, history is what it is. And he may actually be more accurately remembered. We're just not going to honor someone as vile and evil and hateful as he was. At least not with a statue. And meanwhile, efforts continue to cleanse the treason from the statuary hall of the United States Capitol. Also at the Capitol, Nancy Pelosi has put forward new rules relating to the wearing of masks. This was probably at least helped along by the fact that it turned out that a Republican member of the House from South Carolina, again, went around spewing virus particles all over that body, not wearing a mask. And so she's tightened up the restrictions to enforce mask wearing. That was Tom Rice of South Carolina, who wouldn't wear a mask. Well, nonetheless, we're not gonna have that San Francisco liberal Nancy Pelosi putting her jackbooted jackboots down on our freedom-loving necks right next to that tattoo that says "Only God can judge me." So, representing Jim Shorts Jordan, who also can't seem to find a sport coat, and Louis Asparagus Gohmert, and Andy Biggs of Arizona, he must be the new stand-in for Steve Cantaloupe's King. They're all declaring they won't wear no mask! Can't make us, because we got freedom. It's in the Constitution, right there next to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And then there's monumental idiot Clay Higgins from Louisiana Stan. By the way, Clay Higgins is a racist, former violent cop from Louisiana. And he pissed and moaned last month to CNN. It's part of the dehumanization of the cheering of God. You're participating in it by wearing a mask. No, stupid person. We're participating in trying to not spread the goddamn disease. which continues to skyrocket in places like South Carolina and Florida, Alabama, Texas, Oklahoma, Arizona. Yeah. Because freedom. And speaking of freedom, let's check in. Let's check in with some freedom out, I think, Ventura County way. Dave number 11 sent this one along, and it's a real Lulu. Don't blame this one on me. This won't be me singing. There's singing involved. Because a good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, homosexual, Republican, Trump supporter showed up at a county commission meeting and asked for time to speak. I hope you didn't put the hockey puck away. You really want, on any given Wednesday, you want to keep the hockey puck handy. Stop telling us what to keep handy, Bob. This individual is manifesting the great yearnings for freedom that are rampant all throughout the MAGA cult. You could say she's probably even speaking for Jim Shorts Jordan and Louis Asparagus Gohmert and Andy Third Wheel Biggs.
Are you going to be wearing masks when you come in? Are you going to obey that city? And if not, then how in the world are you expecting any of us to obey anything that you say? I protest face coverings. I am a healthy American. I used to be free. I am not a terrorist.
She has a visual aid.
I am not Antifa. I am not a sex slave that wears masks. I am not into sadomasochism and bondage. I am not a burglar. I am not a pandering politician like we see here and here and here and here. I am a proud Trump Republican. Trump Republican.
Brought her Trump poster with her, too.
Again. Who are you, victim or victor? If you are offended by anything I have said, by the masses of people, then I am offended by the masses of people who do not question your wholesale slaughter of our constitutional and inalienable rights.
Slaughter.
Shame on all of you. Let liberty ring.
Sound
God
effects.
God bless America, land that I love.
How much liquor would it take to get you to the point where you would do that? Because I think I'd be flat on my face, passed out, before I got to the point where I could do that. But they're, you know, the stupid is strong with them, these maggots, these cult members. And just as an addendum, Clay Higgins that I mentioned a couple of minutes ago down in Louisiana, Stan, he said, it's obvious that the masks can't do nothing to prevent the Roner because you can still smell through them. And everybody knows that when you got the Roner, you lose your sense of smell.
Okay, I added the part about that was just a logical extension or an illogical extension. But no, he really did say that masks don't prevent COVID-19 because you can still smell through them.
Oh, you smell, Clay Higgins. You smell.
We need to understand, these anti-mask people are just anti-vaxxers with tangible props. They feel about wearing masks the same way that the anti-vaxxers feel about taking vaccinations to prevent spreadable disease. Now, the weird part of that is that if a vaccine comes out or something purporting to be vaccine, you know, maybe a little sealed bottle with some Clorox and Mr. Clean in it, and Nitwit Nero declares that it's a vaccine, these stupid fuckers will line up to get that. The bell ringing lady, Scott in San Diego, says someone needs to step in and adjust her meds quickly. Jesus. Oh, she's not done. Although I have been given leave by Jeremy in Vermont to resume my singing. Mm-hmm. Please start your singing again. It's 100,000 times better than this lady. Yeah, but we're back to that business of multiplying zeros again there, Jeremy. Yes, step in and adjust her meds. Steve in New York. Victor, like the Hunger Games? Bob, I'm sorry, but this woman really needs mental help. I'm sorry if I have a hard time laughing. You got to understand, though, Steve, laughing's all we've got. Because she's probably not as nuts as you think she is. There's a difference between being mentally ill and being brainwashed in a cult. She doesn't need mental health treatment. She needs cult deprogramming treatment. And there's a substantial distinction between the two. As to the lady in South Carolina, Stan, and we use the term lady loosely, as to the woman in South Carolina, Stan, Darlene in Connecticut, says, now that's a feckless see you next Tuesday. Yeah, she's pretty feckless. Kyle noting, cops take white mass murderers to Burger King and kill black men for sleeping. Jesus, fuck the police. Defund. Now. Sigh. I don't know whether to laugh or cry at the hilarity and insanity of the maggots' reasons they don't need to wear a mask or cry that I share a country with these jackasses. Well, what you have to worry about is, what you really have to worry about, stop telling us what we really have to worry about, Bob. What you really have to worry about, Kyle, is whether you're sharing air with these stupid fuckers. And yes, she did voluntarily lie about being a terrorist because she's a terrorist because she's deliberately trying to spread the bio-weaponized version of the disease. And Kyle adds, no, lady, we're not offended. We're entertained by your dumbassery. And Barbara, having had about as much as any Barbara could be expected to stand, said, I don't care if I'm wrong to say this or not, but I hope all those mean, ignorant mofos get that shit and suffer. If only they couldn't spread it to innocent people. And therein lies the rub, Barbara. I posted a kind of a fake Trump rally poster. Coronapalooza 2020, Tulsa, get your tickets. And somebody said, you know, let them thin their own herd. And if that was the case, and we could just lock the doors and, well, remember that early Australian Broadcasting Corporation video that Darlene hipped us to, what seems so very long ago, that showed Chinese authorities welding people into their apartments to keep them from going out and spreading the damn disease? If we could take them and just, and after they're inside that building in Tulsa, just weld all the doors shut and let them, and make sure that they couldn't infect anybody else, that would be one thing. It would effectively be nothing more than quarantining them. You know, we could use some of those hazmat suits and take them food once in a while or whatever. But, you know, quarantine them and the people, and right. But we can't. We have to live with them. And so if we let them just randomly infect and reinfect, then by definition we are condemning some part of decent America to a grim and miserable to grim and miserable death as well. And so while it may be satisfying to say, you know, let them, what we're saying when we say let them is that we're going to let them kill decent people too. And they're already doing that enough as it is. Because they have turned this damn thing into a bioweapon. This is bioterrorism. The newspaper in Tulsa, public health officials in Tulsa are begging the maggot campaign not to come and not to do this to the city. Trump doesn't give a good goddamn. That is the proof that he's not a sociopath. He's a psychopath. There's probably some portion of this that he enjoys. Kyle pointing out, hey, maybe if you let orange assholes stay with them in Tulsa, they won't ever want to leave. Just a thought. Yeah, but he's got to move along because he's got to get down and drive a giant wedge into the Republican Party of Alabama. And make sure that not just Montgomery County, Alabama, it burns up with COVID-19, but that it gets going real, real good, even better than it already is in Mobile County. Via AL.com, the mayor of Montgomery has signed an order mandating masks after the city council rejected a masking vote. An ordinance requiring masks was introduced to the council Tuesday night, failed on a 4-4 tie vote. One of those no votes came from a councilman by the name of Glenn Pruitt, who apologized for his vote at the mayor's press conference. "I was very nearsighted," he said. "I didn't see the big picture. All I was looking at was for enforcement of the ordinance. I'm sorry." But even that masking ordinance was weak. It would have required mandatory masking in public locations with groups of 25 or more people. And fines could have ranged between $25 and $500. Montgomery County, meanwhile, has 2,956 cases of COVID-19. That's 11% of all the cases in the state of Alabama. And 40% of those cases have happened in the last 14 days. And Montgomery County accounts for 9% of all the COVID-19 fatalities in Alabama. That county is burning. And so Mayor Stephen Reed is going to enter an order in his own right to require mask wearing. And so the babies will, I'm sure, be out in force, waving their Confederate flags, maybe their swastikas, and marching with their goons in front of the mayor's office. And when they do that, curiously, no member of the police will kneel on their necks until they can't breathe anymore. You know, as long as they're white. Mayor Reed said, "Our goal is to try and help this community get to the point where we can fully reopen, where we can be fully comfortable doing many of the things we did prior to this pandemic." But there are very few, if any, major municipalities, especially in maggot states in this country, where they have met even the phase one reopening guidelines, let alone phase two. But, you know, the malls and the department stores are back open even here in the hills. freedom. Back to our friend in the county commission meeting, or city council meeting, whatever it was. Because there is one humorous little part of this.
Inalienable rights. Shame on all of you. Let liberty ring.
Not freedom,
God
liberty.
God bless America.
Sit, liberty, sit.
Land that I love, stand beside her and guide her through the night with the light from above. From the oceans to the prairies to the mountains, white with foam, God bless.
Yeah, that's right. The mountains white with foam. If it wasn't so damn deadly, it would be just gut-bustingly funny. As it is, it's just mildly funny. From the mountains to the prairies to the oceans white with foam. But no, it's from the oceans to the prairies to the mountains white with foam because, well, we've all seen those foam-covered mountains. Maybe she was thinking about Trump and Stormy or something. I don't know. Trukaki? Well, there went dinner in the Central Daylight Time Zone. And that one's on me, and I apologize. Sing it, lady. If she can stand it, I can. Sing it, Sam.
Yes, America, my home sweet home. God bless America, my home sweet home. Let liberty ring!
Thank you.
Yeah. Liberty, again. Sit, liberty, sit. Woo! Not freedom, liberty. God, that's special. Somebody responded and said, worst open mic poetry night ever. And the clerk of the commission or whatever said, thank you for your comments. God, that's precious. I mean, you know, in a breathtakingly stupid kind of way, precious. A serious question asks Kyle, how does anyone take the Republicans seriously as a party that can govern anything, and how the fuck do people vote for them? Well, you've got to be the people who run for office are cynical, and they don't believe any of this bullshit, for the most part. But they know that people can be manipulated through their ignorance. That's how. Fabio, meanwhile, points out, and all the for-profit, meretricious mainstream media is going to broadcast Coronapalooza 2020 because money. Jeremy in Vermont wants to know, did that lady kill Prancer? It sounded just like the Belle in the movie, only not cute. Lee in New York asks, God bless America, do you think she knows it was written by a Jewish immigrant? Shh. Don't ruin it. Irving Berlin once remarked that his proudest achievements were the de-Christianization of Easter and Christmas. That with his two songs, Easter Parade and White Christmas, he had effectively taken all the religiosity out of those two holidays and turned them into secular events of hat wearing and snow appreciation. I don't know. I don't know, Kyle. How did the clerk keep a straight face? It would have been helpful if somebody, and of course the room was practically empty, but it would have been far more effective had there been a few people back there behind her to helplessly descend into paroxysms of uncontrollable laughter. Or possibly she would have just turned around and shot them then. Oh, so much stupid, so little time. Going back to the question of erasing history, Steve in New York points out, if someone says they're erasing history, ask this question. Why don't we have a Benedict Arnold High School? Do you think Germany has any military bases called the Adolf Hitler Air Force Base? And Brother Deacon Asa, thinking along the same lines an entire continent away, says, how would the maggots fancy placing a bust of Osama bin Laden in the Capitol Rotunda? After all, 9/11 is a piece of United States history, and Osama bin Laden is the central figure in it. And then, of course, what would be hilarious would be the story if somebody made a suggestion like that, and over on Fox News TV Radio Rwanda, Antifa member suggests putting monument up to Osama bin Laden, completely oblivious to the irony involved. Foaming mountains, asks Scott in San Diego. The only foam I see is coming out of this mad woman's mouth. But she does make me believe in reincarnation. She was the Liberty Bell in a previous life. Wait for it. Since she's obviously cracked. I kind of saw that one coming. It was good, just the same. And by the way, thanks very kindly to Jeremy for jumping in on fundraising this evening. And thanks to Clarence, formerly of Philly, now of South Carolina, Stan. So that means that we are down to 335 to go to come even with fundraising. Thank you very kindly, David and Jeremy and Clarence. Hopefully you will continue to get company through the course of the program. And going back a little ways, I had a note from Suman. 2020 polls. Suman says, sorry to be a ray of bright fucking sunshine. I hate to be a broken record on this. My work deals with statistics every single day, and I love it. Based on a quick estimate, there are about 3% of people who say they will not vote for Trump, but will do so. So unless Biden is at least 1% above the margin of error, i.e. 1% plus margin of error percentage, approximate minimum 4% ahead, I wouldn't really count on a Democratic win in any place. My estimate is they are both neck and neck in those swing states. Everything will depend on the way that last precious percentage of undecided voters break four in the last week of the election. If history teaches us anything, they usually break for the Republicans. Also, 538 was the only site in 2016 to consistently say that Trump had a good chance of winning by a small percentage. They actually test their models, unlike the idiots at Real Clear Politics. Sorry, it bothers me when people don't test their models. Well, you and Trump both, Suman. He likes to test models. Sometimes very young, nubile models, as has been copiously documented. Shame on me for that. I was not comparing you to Donald J. Trump. The J stands for pervert. My sincere apologies, Suman. Nonetheless, there's some scary shit out there. And it goes back to what I was saying all along. It's not enough to beat him. You got to stomp him. Everywhere we have an opportunity to stomp him, he has to be stomped. He has to be overwhelmed. There has to be a blue nami. Because the reality is, Republicans don't win high turnout elections. In order to win, and we need to bear this in mind, in order to win, Republicans always have to have suppressed turnout. We need, and it's unlikely, part of the reason we need to amend the Constitution establishing the date of the general election. we need a more north a more northern hemisphere friendly general election day, because we need a day. Oh, how about the first Saturday in June? That only works around here. But we need a day when there's a much better chance of warm, sunny weather, so that lots of people will come out and vote. And then we can, and then maybe somehow or another, we could bid bye-bye to Republicans, for the most part, for fucking ever. And there's a photograph, courtesy of David in South Carolina, Stan, of Shit for Brains Gym Shorts Jordan not wearing a mask, sitting there spewing viral particles at an African-American member of Congress, because he's too stupid to understand what that how the mask stuff works. Right. If you don't have a if you have to wear a mask, you don't have no liberty. Steve noting, so requiring one to wear a mask in public equals slavery? To the maggots, yes. Bob, stop saying all along it's not enough to beat him, we need to stomp him. It promotes violence against fruit. Okay, Jeremy. Okay. Meanwhile, Dave in the Blind says, name that lunatic. I remember a game show back in the 70s called Name That Tune. I can identify this woman in one note. She said she's not a sex slave. Au contraire, I have a feeling she ties herself up in front of a picture of Donnie and worships him as a god. All right, that bit of visual horror is brought to you by Dave from the Blind. That's not on me. That's the second gut punch against dinner in the Central Daylight Time Zone. But it was not on me. Blame Dave. But there is lots of stupid, definitely lots and lots of stupid for us to get into. And we've even got another... And why is it, and I'm presuming that there's no overt failure here. Why are the vast majority of the anti-mask shriekers women? I don't know. But that certainly seems to be what I'm seeing on a day-to-day basis, based upon my daily research. Bear with me here. I'm looking for our next clip. We'll find it in a minute. Ah, there she is. I believe this is, out of Arcata, California. And here she is again. Not the singing lady, but. Well, I tell you what, no offense to the California contingent of the Horn Family Community Congregation, but is it just because y'all's population is so huge that you've got so many more of these morons, these Trump-tanic intellects, these shrieking goonies? I mean, it's a convenience store in Arcata, California. And the clerk at the convenience store is a Latina, and well, we'll let it speak for itself.
Okay, get out.
No,
your passport was automatic.
Do you know what freedom is? Are you from America? Are you an American? Or are you an illegal immigrant? Because you look like one. You also look like a Nazi too. You look like a Nazi.
Oh my goodness.
Your M&Ms, being all happy. But what you're doing is you're trying to enforce supreme order over people and their natural rights to be free. Hitler. I know, you're nervous because you have no brains and don't know what to say. That's your defense mechanism, is to laugh.
And yours is?
You're a fool, you're fat and ugly, and you have a lame-ass job. Fuck you.
And I'm proud to be an American, where at least I know I'm free. And I don't have to wear no mask, so I can get the virus for me. And I'd proudly cough up lots of phlegm and not get it on the flag. 'Cause I love this land, God bless the USA. Hitler. Mm-hmm. Yep, brunette white lady wearing a trucker cap. You look like an illegal immigrant. Hitler's what you look like. And of course, they were the only ones in the store, so there was no decent American there to slap the living shit out of that ignorant human being. It does get wearisome. Robert in Australia, give me liberty or give me death. Liberty equals not wearing a mask. Not wearing a mask equals potential death. Potential death equals liberty. Somewhere, the ashes of Aristotle are shrieking, atom by atom by atom. At the end of the clip, though, the woman throws a piece of paper at the clerk and then exits the store, because she was asked to wear a mask. It is nothing short of, well, it's not astonishing, but it is tragic in its own way. Well, that's a theory. Yeah, Barbara says maybe they're afraid that if Clorox Caligula can't see their face, he won't grab them by the pussy. Yeah, why not? Makes as much sense as anything they could do. Well, thank you, Jeremy. Cowbell, says Jeremy. Okay. Yep, definitely better singing than the first lady's singing. Oh, and by the way, we're supposed to believe there are so many sick people who can't wear a mask based on a doctor's orders. I want to see the order, then I want to see the doctor. Oh, you've got a man. Well, show me your note. Well, no, because HIPAA, I ain't got to show you no note because I got freedom. For food of happiness in the Constitution. Refresh my memory, says Steve in New York. I'm thinking these were the same people saying this shit when the law required seatbelts and motorcycle helmets. Oh, my God, Bob. First it was seatbelts, then helmets, now masks. What's next? Next, making a stop at a light that turns red that they'll call a red light or a stop light. Ring the bell of freedom. God damn stupid people. Meanwhile, Dr. Anthony Fauci is just trying to get fired now. It's all become a game to him. A reporter asked him if he would be attending Trump's Corona-palooza out in Tulsa. And Dr. Fauci just said, of course not.
Thanks, Tony. Fortunately, my fans aren't a bunch of egghead intellectuals like you.
No. No, they're not, Nitwit Nero. They're definitely not. Merciful God. Round and round we go, and where the wheel stops, no one knows. Steve in New York. HIPAA? And rhinoceros? Of course rhinoceros. No, there's been a new revelation in regard to Garrett Rolfe, the guy who murdered Raynard Brooks in Atlanta last Friday. Turns out Garrett Rolfe has what we might call a past. You know, when you find a murderous cop, what you'll find out is that they've usually... It's not their first rodeo. How many different complaints were there against Derek Chauvin? Well, so too with Garrett Rolfe of the Atlanta Police Department. He's the one who gunned down Raynard Brooks, but in August of 2015, not quite 5 years ago, he and other officers covered up a different shooting. Rolfe and two other APD cops blazed away at a stolen truck suspect by the name of Jermaine Harris. I probably don't need to mention that Jermaine Harris is an African-American man. Jermaine Harris was definitely doing wrong things. But regardless, the police are not empowered with the ability to serve as judge, jury, and executioner and to carry out summary executions willy-nilly. Jermaine Harris rammed a police vehicle he was a suspect in a stolen truck case. And eventually would be charged with theft, property damage, fleeing arrest, damaging a police vehicle. Like I said, he was having a bad day. But, and this is a huge but, that did not empower Garrett Rolfe and two other cops to shoot him. Rolfe and three cops discharged their weapons at Jermaine Harris. They hit him once, collapsed his lung. He was carted off to Grady Memorial Hospital in Atlanta. That's the big hospital downtown. And what Garrett Rolfe and his fellow officers didn't do was include in the report that they had shot him. This was established by Judge Doris Downs. In the case, she wrote, none of the police put in the report that they shot the man. None of them. And they sent him to Grady with collapsed lungs and everything, and the report doesn't mention it. She said, I am ethically going to be required to turn all of them in. This was in 2016 in a report. What the police did was wrong, and they will have to answer for what they did. Here's the problem. A court spokesperson said, well, you know, the Georgia Bureau of Investigation, the GBI, never investigated the Jermaine Harris shooting. Meanwhile, the APD released Garrett Rolfe's personnel file, and there's not a single mention in there of any disciplinary action against him in that shooting, because that shooting was referred to only as a firearm discharge. Now, once he was convicted and imprisoned, Jermaine Harris wrote to Judge Doris Downs. And he said, not only have I been wronged, but society as well has been wronged by allowing this officer to continue to patrol our streets of Metro Atlanta. Imagine that. Almost 5 years ago, had the Georgia Bureau of Investigation done its fucking job, Raynard Brooks might be alive. But instead, they looked the other way on a dirty cop who lied about discharging his weapon. A firearm discharge. Firearm, singular, when in fact three cops shot, including Garrett Rolfe, shot at Jermaine Harris. He has been charged, Garrett Rolfe has, with felony murder. And there is somewhat of a difference between being charged with felony murder in Atlanta, in Georgia, versus being charged with felony murder in, say, Minneapolis, or second-degree murder. Minneapolis held its last public execution sometime in the early 20th century. Georgia probably held its latest public execution a couple of weeks ago, or within the last few months. Garrett Rolfe can look to be protected by his white skin and his police union. Again, he will not spend a penny on his legal defense, and he will have the best criminal defense that money can buy in the state of Georgia. Not Matlock. God. It always works out this way, doesn't it? The bad ones turn out to have a history of being bad and having others protect them in their malevolence. By the way, Cynthia with a note. It's called Freedom, Bob. Freedom. F-R-E-E hyphen D-U-M-B. Free to be dumb. Free to be stupid. Free to be ignorant. Hell, even free to be immature, spoiled brat two-year-olds. Take them to the woodshed, Bob. Take them to the woodshed. It's for their own good, really. Oh, I know. And the thing is, it's so damn pervasive. And it extends to the highest levels of government. Matt Gaetz, a member of the House of Representatives, a Republican, a huge maggot, and apparently a guy with a significant drinking problem. I mean, if you gauge by all his DUIs, you know, the ones that his daddy got him off of. He got into it with Representative Eric Swalwell today. It's a hell of an exchange. Let's see here.
Being free. When black people get free, everybody gets free. Black lives matter, period. And so I would yield to any of my colleagues on the Republican side who can unequivocally say,
wait a minute. This is called throwing down a gauntlet. He's offering to yield to any Republican for something fairly simple.
Black lives matter, period. And so I would yield to any of my colleagues on the Republican side who can unequivocally say, as we calibrate where we are right now, that black lives matter.
Thank the gentleman for yielding. Does the gentleman believe that all lives matter as well? I think black lives matter. I think all lives matter.
Reclaiming my time. Can anyone on the Republican side say unequivocally black lives matter?
You know, without saying all lives matter. Because at this point in time, when you say all lives matter, you're sort of outing yourself. And there have been so many good examples. The burning house analogy. Where there's a house on fire, and you say, we got to put out this fire, and somebody turns to you and points out all the houses that aren't on fire and says, all houses matter. Yeah, but one's on fire. Or, in a relationship, one individual says, you've hurt my feelings. And the other person in the relationship responds with, all feelings matter. Well, that's not the point. We're not talking about all feelings. We're talking about a specific set of feelings. And so Matt Gaetz gets himself into an intellectual debate for which he is virtually unarmed.
Unequivocally, all lives matter. Why is that a problem to acknowledge?
Reclaiming my time. I think it's clear that my colleagues on the other side would like to put up a straw man to not have the uncomfortable conversation that we need to have about race. Typically, in police shootings, most of the focus is on the conduct of the officer, and we never get to the harder part about the systemic issues we have in our country. Nobody is disputing that what the officer did here with Mr. Floyd should be defended. So we have to have the harder conversation about systemic issues and policing. Instead, we get this straw man of, well, you're trying to defund the police. Nowhere in this legislation is anyone seeking to defund the police. So until you're willing to get rid of the straw man, get rid of the confusion, get rid of all of the different tactics you're using to avoid the hard conversation about race in America, we are not going to get where we need to be to have equality, not just in policing, but in healthcare, in jobs, in education.
Will the gentleman
Black
yield?
Lives matter. I'm
I
sad
can say
to say
unequivocally,
no one on the other
Black
side
lives
say
do
it.
Matter, unequivocally. Yeah. Black lives.
Curiously, this is Louis Asparagus Gohmert.
Every life is precious, God-given, and Black Lives Matter unequivocally. Every life is important.
Thank you. I yield back.
The gentleman yields back, Mr. Jordan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I support the gentleman from North Dakota's amendment.
Now, bear something in mind here. Louis Asparagus Gohmert could not do what Eric Swalwell asked. He said, Black Lives Matter, unequivocally. But then he took it back. Black Lives Matter, unequivocally. All lives are precious. One house is burning. All houses aren't burning. He said Black Lives Matter unequivocally, but then, because he's Louis Asparagus Gohmert and neither the brightest bulb in the chandelier nor the sharpest knife, sharpest spoon in the drawer, he equivocated. Unequivocal, then equivocated. And it degenerated from there. With, ultimately, Matt Gaetz being handed time back to make his argument, his failed argument again, employing a rhetorical device, saying, "The theatrics of serving us up the question on a political theme seem to be a bit misplaced. It would be as if I were willing to yield to any Democrat willing to say that blue lives matter, right? Not super productive. Problem." And either because they are willfully obtuse or hopelessly ignorant, or both. Both is always a possibility. They seem incapable of comprehending the idea that there is a big damn difference between saying Black Lives Matter and Blue Lives Matter. Why? Because there are no such thing as blue lives. If, and God knows they've a right to, if an indigenous group says Native Lives Matter, I got a feeling there wouldn't just be a hell of a lot of pushback from the black community on that. Because both groups have suffered horrifically and are suffering in real time. Right now. And indigenous lives are real. People are born indigenous as they are born black. No one is born a cop. No matter how many families there are where mama was a cop and daddy was a cop and grandpa was a cop and grandma was a cop and other grandpa was a cop and other grandma was a cop and great and great and great and great. It is not a function of birth. Copping is an occupation, not a condition of birth. Any problems that come from being a cop stem from an active choice that someone made to be a cop. Just as Garrett Rolfe in Atlanta made an active choice to hide the fact that he and two other cops shot at a man in 2015. They are conditions not of birth, but of choice. So in a genuinely sick and twisted way, when these assholes say blue lives matter, they are supporting a right to choose. A right to choose to be blue, or in the case of the state police in West Virginia, green, or in the case of the sheriffs around here, gray. But blue is the general, the generalized metaphor. But there is no such thing as a blue life. Because no one is compelled. to live the life of a cop. People become cops for any number of reasons. Some good, some bad. And so the question becomes, is it willful ignorance, willful obtusity, all of the above? Why do these damned fools try to counter the idea of Black Lives Matter by saying, Blue Lives Matter? I don't have any easy answer for that. Now, there are people out there that fetishize law enforcement. They're the authoritarian types who get off on that kind of thing. The proliferation over the course of the rise of film and television of movies and TV shows about law enforcement prove to us the breadth and the depth of the police fetish that exists in this country. We like stories about good cops. We like stories about bad cops. We like stories about cops. And in all honesty, I don't know. Not long ago, I was talking about Agnes and me watching all six seasons of Bosch. Maybe it's because it provides a compelling platform for storytelling. Clear delineations of right and wrong, good and bad, and then an opportunity to examine the gray areas in between. I don't know. But what I do know is that no one who puts forward a Blue Lives Matter argument is doing so in anything that can vaguely be referred to as good faith. It just can't be done. And meanwhile, the reality behind the idea of Black Lives Matter, well, we get an exemplar of that every damn day. Checking in with email. Louis Gohmert, Scott in San Diego, says, might have just as well have sung a few verses of Every Sperm is Sacred. That's where all lives are precious. Yeah, that was a dig at a woman's right to choose. A question for Jim Jordan coming from Stephen, New York. Do college boys whom a coach molests and you know about it matter? Yeah. He doesn't want to hear any such as that. Oh, no. You know, yesterday evening I had a story about five kids walking through a neighborhood on the way to the store. And a cop held him at gunpoint because, well, black and in neighborhood. Something similar to the point of almost being identical took place in Wellington, Florida. A group of teenagers outside, and a cranky old white man comes out and begins screaming at them and gets videoed in the process.
Taking my picture, I really don't care.
Okay.
Because you don't belong.
Wait, what?
Taking my picture, I really don't care.
Okay.
Because you don't belong in this development.
Yeah. Okay.
What's your name?
Live here.
I'm not telling you.
I live here.
Okay, where do you live?
Why would we tell you any of this?
No, where do you live?
I'm not telling you.
Where do you live?
I'm not telling you.
Okay, not a problem. I'm going to call the gate and have you all arrested.
You're helpful. Okay.
You do not deserve to be in here.
Okay.
What did we even do wrong?
Seriously? I have to wait for them 5 minutes while they're strewn around the road.
No.
We're backing up for you.
You have a problem because I can get my grandfather.
Yeah. You're going to hit us with the car?
Bring him out right now. Bring him out right now.
Thank you.
Thank you.
It is because you're driving illegally.
Okay, but you're coming at 15-year-olds.
Saying you're going to hit us with the car.
Because you're 15 years old? You could marry in Mississippi or Alabama.
This is not Mississippi or Alabama. This is Florida.
It's Florida.
Okay.
Sir.
So you're going to hit us with the car.
Don't stick your hand out. Did you threaten a child?
I did not threaten a child.
I have it on video.
You just said you're going to hit us with the car.
I have it on video.
Did you threaten someone with your car?
No, I did not.
Yes, you did. We have it on.
Go inside. Let me see the video.
Oops. Because see, that's the thing. They lived there. But Brad, I guess, just couldn't, in all his pinkness, imagine that. Because did you hear him say, "Well, I'm going to call the gatehouse. This is one of those gated communities in Florida. And what are those kind of children doing here? This guy actually followed them home. They were in a golf cart. And he began tailing them and screaming at them. And that's when they started recording. And demanding that they bring their grandfather out. It's no wonder that this country is teetering on the brink. And then, as Jeremy noticed, that one line, "You don't deserve to be here." You know, she'd pulled out a .44 Magnum with a 6-inch barrel and pointed at him, and in her best Clint Eastwood voice said, "Deserving's got nothing to do with it." No, that would have been terrible, but you get the idea. Yeah. Then there's the retired Cook County judge in Illinois. In a report from the Chicago Sun-Times, he got caught on video this past Saturday as people gathered around a statue of the genocidal maniac Christopher Columbus in the Little Italy neighborhood of Chicago. The former judge's name is Robert Bertucci, and he gets more and more and more furious with the protester as the confrontation continues. Wow.
When I was in seventh grade, yeah. I was getting hate notes every day for 2 weeks. And I didn't know. No, I grew up in Mount Prospect, fully white community. I was getting hate notes every day for 2 weeks. I didn't tell anybody because all my friends were white. 2 weeks later, I get written on my locker in front of the whole school. I have to go to the principal, who's white, doesn't do anything about it.
That sucks. Sorry.
Yeah, so did anything like that happen to you when you were younger, when you were growing up, when you were an adult, when you were 5 years old? Did anything like that ever happen to you? No, it didn't. And all you are is bothered by hypocrisy.
Hey.
Don't spit on me.
Don't get close to me. Don't spit on me.
You got that thing on me.
And having delivered a little lecture on what it's like to be a target and a victim of bias, the former Cook County judge took a swing at the kid. Over a statue of a guy who precipitated a genocide and still manages to be honored as some manifestation of greatness. Back to Georgia. There's a House seat that's up for grabs in Northwest Georgia. It's probably Republican plus a gajillion. Well, there's a woman running for that House seat named Marjorie Taylor Greene, who, again, has been caught on video. I'll spare you. Politico found the videos of her talking some serious racist shit. Nice white blonde lady. Nah, let's get it from the horse's mouth. What do you say? Shouldn't we? Among other things, well, if she wound up the general election candidate, she would be a shoo-in. But, well, that's not a for certain yet. She's merely a candidate. Right?
There is an Islamic invasion into our government offices right now. Okay, they are. You saw after midterm elections what we saw, so many Muslims elected. I don't know the exact number, but there were quite a few. What, we had that woman out of Minnesota. Now she's going into Congress and she's got to wear a head covering. You know, they want to put their hand on the Quran and be sworn in. No, you have to be sworn in on the Bible. But we have an Islamic invasion into our government offices. Now, yes, we have, I'll say this, we have freedom of religion in this country that protects anyone to have, you know, have any kind of a religion that they want. And that's great. That's one of our freedoms, right? But I'm sorry, anyone that is a Muslim that believes in Sharia law does not belong in our government. They don't. Islam is the Sharia law is the most brutal. It is a horrible, horrible law. They brutalize women.
Yeah, hold on a minute there, lady. It's interesting when these damn fools talk about, you know, Sharia law. It's been a while since I've heard about Sharia law. It kind of took a back seat for a little while there to the bathrooms and other things that. She's a big fan of Marjorie here. She's a big fan of QAnon too. Mm-hmm. Yep. And Marjorie Taylor Greene, while like other Republicans, while she brings up Sharia law, they never bring up Roman Catholic canon law. Because that's a religious law that practitioners of that religion have to follow. And among other things, Roman Catholic canon law was used to, burn people at the stake, thousands and thousands and thousands of human beings, as witches. And the witchcraft having been proved by such conduct as bathing. You never hear him bring up Torah law that requires all male children to have their penises mutilated a week after they're born. Never, ever, ever. Meanwhile, they wouldn't know Sharia law if a scroll inscribed Sharia law walked up to them on the street and introduced themselves to her. But boy, I tell you what, it is some kind of Jim Dandy for whipping up the rubes. Oh, yes, Lord. The rubes get into an absolute frothing fury at the mere mention of Sharia law. What do you want to bet this woman's got a better than even chance of being on the ballot in November?
They throw gay people off of buildings. It is not a place for justice. No. This is a place where the men over there, they can have sex with anybody they want. They have sex with little boys, little girls, multiple women. They marry as many women as they want. They marry their sisters, their cousins.
Wait a minute. Sex with little boys? Are you sure she's not talking about Roman Catholic priests?
Cousins. I'm sorry. That is not dignity. That is not justice. That is not compassion. That's not love for humanity. Let me explain something to you, Muhammad. Let me explain. We already have equality and justice for all Americans. Muslims are not being held back in any way.
Yeah, of course not. Yeah. Jesus.
That's our Constitution, our Bill of Rights, guarantees everyone equality and justice.
Then Constitution.
What you people want is special treatment. You want to rise above us, and that's what we're against.
You people.
Yeah, they should stay in their countries and make their countries great again, right? Leave our country alone. Leave it alone. This whole world, this beautiful, beautiful, big blue ball, planet Earth, it's like a buffet of countries. It's like a buffet. If you want Islam and Sharia law, you stay over there in the Middle East. You stay there and you go to Mecca and do all your thing and... You know what? You can have a whole bunch of wives or goats or sheep or whatever you want. You stay over there.
Yeah, why do you reckon Marjorie Taylor Greene doesn't go back to where she came from? Because I'm looking at her and, well, you're not because this is a radio program. I'm looking at her and I can tell you that she is not Cherokee and she ain't Chickasaw. She's not Choctaw. She is not Dene. She is not Anishinaabe. She's not Sioux. She's not Cheyenne, Apache, Arapaho, Blackfoot, Crow, Wampanoag, Haudenosaunee. She needs to go back where she come from, bringing her weird Christian religion over here. Amongst a bunch of decent people who know better.
But in America, see, we made it this great, great country. We don't want it messed up. The generations of black and Hispanic men, do you want to know what holds them down? Gangs. Being in gangs. And
you know, she knows so much. She knows so much about all kinds of people that she doesn't even know. You know what holds back in black and brown people? Gangs. Mm-hmm. Yep. It's gangs.
Dealing drugs is what holds them down.
Oh, drug dealing.
The lack of education is what holds them down. That's not a white person thing, but gangs control them. They tell the young men in their communities, don't go to school. Don't you move out of this project. Don't you move out of this community. You join this gang.
You know how she knows this? Because Sean Hannity and Fox News TV Radio Rwanda and Rush Limbaugh and Laura Ingraham and maybe Aryan Pride Barbie, Tommy Lauren, they done told her so, and they wouldn't lie to her.
And that's where you belong. You belong with us. The gangs are holding them back. It's not white people. It's crazy.
How about that? I had no, well, I guess you could say that Derek Chauvin was a member of a gang. You might call him the Blue Gang when he put his knee on George Floyd's neck. Yeah. Old Garrett Rolfe was a member of a Blue Gang when he pumped a couple of rounds into the back of Raynard Brooks. And well, Breonna Taylor, she got taken out by three members of a Blue Gang in Louisville. It's the gang violence keeping them down.
Okay, so we'll continue on. He says, likewise, despite centuries of exclusion and robust evidence of continuing racism, minority underemployment is often couched in the language of bad choices and personal responsibility. I gotta tell you, anybody's unemployment has to do with bad choices and personal responsibility. And again, that does not have a skin color.
Right. That's what all those signs in the South used to say, you know. They'd say, person who made bad choices, don't let the sun set on you here. And Emmett Till, he just made some bad choices. Like deciding to set foot outside the house he was visiting there in Mississippi. Because that's all he had to do. And there was a woman waiting there to make up everything that led to him having, well, the life beaten out of him and a cotton gin fan chain wrapped around him and his lifeless body chucked in the Pearl River. Bad choices, you see. Medgar Evers made a bad choice of stepping out in front of his house one evening after he came home. He made a bad choice And that's what allowed a Klansman to put bullets through his body. You see, bad choices. I mean, Breonna Taylor, bad choices. I mean, she come home from work and snuggled up with her boyfriend, and that was a bad choice because then she fell asleep. And then the Blue Gang came in and pumped eight rounds into her. Bad choices. Oh, this goes on for another 6 minutes, if you can imagine. And what's really awful about all this is it's given the Republican leadership in the House of Representatives a big old sad. Yeah. And so they're running as fast as they can to get away from her because she keeps God damn these people. Why do they have to keep saying the quiet part out loud? And so, well, there's House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy and he had to walk a very fine line because he had to figure out a way to say that he didn't appreciate what Marjorie Taylor Greene was saying, but he had to say it in such a way that everybody who supports Kevin McCarthy would understand that it wasn't that she said it or believed it, it's that she said it out loud. These comments are appalling, and Leader McCarthy has no tolerance for them. That's what the spokescreep for Kevin McCarthy said. And then Representative Steve Scalise, who once addressed a Klan meeting, said, "The comments made by Ms. Greene are disgusting and don't reflect the values of equality and decency that make our country great." And everybody who speaks Republican knows that what that means is we sure wish she'd shut the fuck up till after the election. This is a lead pipe cinch seat, and we would like to hang on to what few lead pipe cinch seats we've goddamn got. I know a ton of white people that are lazy and sorry and I know a ton of white people that are as lazy and sorry and probably worse than black people. And that has, you know, any black people, all black people. Probably worse than black people. And that has everything to do with their bad choices and their personal responsibility. That is not a skin color issue, probably. Worse than black people, probably. I don't know why it is I keep forgetting to buy the Rock Gut Tequila and get a new swirly straw. Must have a mental block about it, because I'd be about halfway into it at this point. And yeah, while we're at it, yeah, QAnon, because of course. It was June the 12th when that noted sage, Chris Saliza at CNN, wrote a story about her. Wait, I was wrong. She's already the nominee. She's going to be on the November ballot. The Republican primary in Georgia's 14th district on Tuesday didn't draw much national attention. After all, it's an overwhelmingly Republican district that GOP Representative Tom Graves had held easily for a decade in Congress before announcing his retirement last year. But when all the votes were counted, it became clear that the 14th district was on the verge of making history, electing the first openly pro-QAnon member of Congress in Marjorie Taylor Greene. Oh, shit. And it's no surprise. Her campaign says Marjorie in blue. There's a blue box around it with 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 red stars and a blue box. And it's in blue, it says Marjorie, and then big all caps in red, Green. See, you use red because her name's Green. It's like Christmas. And then back in blue again underneath her last name. Save Merca! Stop socialism! I guess we'll be tearing up those taxpayer-funded paved roads there in the 14th District of Georgia. Stop socialism! Wonder if anybody even bothered to run as the Democrat in that district. Hey, Steve from Georgistan, can you check that out real quick? I mean, you know, you're our Georgia correspondent. Oh, my God. Uh, can you reckon somebody in the 14th can scare up a write-in campaign or something? Back in 2017, she made a video, Marjorie Taylor Greene did, where she said, Q is a patriot. He's someone that very much loves his country, and he's on the same page as us, and he's very pro-Trump. He's her imaginary friend, Q. She's posted the hashtag that is the sort of secret lodge password for the QAnon goobers. Trust the plan. Hashtag Great Awakening. And on her Twitter account earlier this month, she shows herself holding a gun. It says, Antifa, which I don't even understand, has declared war on our country. That real Donald Trump responded by declaring them a domestic terrorist organization. Here's my message to Antifa terrorists. Oh, for God's sakes, let's just play it and get it over with.
President Trump declared Antifa a domestic terrorist organization. I have a message for Antifa terrorists. Stay the hell out of Northwest Georgia. You won't burn our churches, loot our businesses, or destroy our homes. I'm Marjorie Greene, and I approve this message.
I'm Marjorie Greene, and I'm crazier than a sprayed fucking roach. Steve in New York says, Marjorie Greene, I'll take rule of holes for 100, Alex. See, she doesn't understand the rule of holes, and she doesn't even think she's, you know, in one. Great jumping Jehoshaphat. As to gangs, Jeremy in Vermont says she's talking about the 400-plus white supremacist gangs, and she's too fucking stupid to know it. Well, to her, Jeremy, there's no such thing as white supremacist gangs. Steve in New York says, people who made bad choices only. Yeah, there we go. Yeah. People who made bad choices only water fountains. Mm-hmm. I love her analogy, says Scott in San Diego. The world is a big blue marble with a buffet of countries. Yep. And she wants to be the sneeze guard over the salad bar. Jumping Jesus, Bob, the hills are indeed alive with the sound of stupid. The hills are alive. Run! Run! For fuck's sake, run! Yeah. Hey, thanks to Colin. Colin just jumped in, and by Jove, we have now knocked out we've now knocked out half of yesterday. Thank you, Colin. Thanks a ton. That's tremendous. I cannot thank you enough. That is monumentally helpful. Thank you, Colin. Steve in Georgia Stan sending me her website. This is all you need to know, brother. Oh dear. Almost afraid to look. Don't go into the basement.
I'm a conservative wife, mother, and businesswoman who 100% stands with President Trump and against the left-wing socialists who want to wreck our country.
Oh, my. So, here's a question. If Kevin McCarthy is so upset about her, and she is the de facto victor come November, will he refuse to seat her? Now, I know that's a terribly difficult question for a professional journalist to ask, but might be handy to ask. Well, there is an opponent. House Minority Whip Steve Scalise says they're disgusting and don't. Yeah, and then he says, I will be supporting Dr. Cowan. And by the way, she wasn't anywhere near done in just what I shared with you. Nope. She compared Black Lives Matter to neo-Nazis and, wait for it, the Klan. She specifically compared Black Lives Matter to the neo-Nazis and Klan members who marched in Charlottesville and murdered an anti-fascist protester, Heather Heyer. Among other things, she referred to Black Lives Matter as idiots. Okay, no, she's not the de facto, she's not the nominee. I was wrong, Chris Saliza was wrong. She has a primary runoff challenger on August the 11th, neurosurgeon John Cowan, who himself, the only thing recommending him may be the fact that he doesn't say the quiet part out loud. Generally speaking, physicians, Republican physicians who run for office turn out to be monumental nut jobs. Yeah, there's a number of them. Yeah, Rand Paul comes to mind. But the question remains. If she wins, will the Republicans refuse to seat her? Politico, who published this story, did what journalists are supposed to do, and they reached out to her campaign for comment. Politico. And when they reached out to her campaign for comment, well, Isaiah Wartman, it's a bird, it's a plane, it's Wartman! Isaiah Wartman didn't challenge the authenticity of the videos, but instead wrote back to Politico saying, thanks for the reminder about Soros. We forgot to put him in our newest ad. We're fixing that now. Would you like me to send you a copy? And, of course, George Soros is a huge anti-Semitic dog whistle. If I continued to play that video, you would hear her say that black women have it easier in life than white women because of affirmative action. And that they can get into college easier than a white male who has the same GPA. The most mistreated group of people in the United States today are white males. National Republican Campaign Committee spokescreep Chris Pack and Chairman Tom Emmer, a pig licking from Minnesota, are personally disgusted by this rhetoric and condemns it in the strongest possible terms. Still nothing there about not seating her if she wins. Liz Cheney, daughter of Count Dicula, a spokescreep for her said, obviously Representative Cheney opposes these offensive and bigoted comments. Well, there's a big difference between opposing comments and opposing the person who made them, Liz! Mm-hmm. Among other things, Marjorie Greene has proudly taken photos with a white supremacist. She's chimed in saying that the massacre in Las Vegas was a false flag. to try to get rid of the Second Amendment and called one of the activists from the Marjorie Stoneman Douglas massacre, high school massacre at Parkland High in Parkland, Florida, Little Hitler. Oh, you remember how I mentioned that Andy Biggs had become the third stooge in the absence of Steve Cantaloupe's King, and that Andy Biggs and Jim Jordan and Louis Asparagus Gomert weren't going to wear no masks because freedom? Well, Andy Biggs, or Pig Lickin' of Arizona, who is the chairman of the Feed'em Caucus, and Jim Jordan, and Jody Heiss of Georgia. He's a minister of the gospel, you know. Have all endorsed her. Mm-hmm. But I've gone, you know, the Democrats are going after her. And by the way, just because she's so good at it all, she went on to say, and this is a talking point from the maggot white wing, that Democrats are trying to keep the black people in a modern-day form of slavery. It's a slavery system to keep their vote. And it goes on and on and on, this article. And I'm trying to figure out how it is that you write an article this long, Ali Mutnick and Melanie Zanona at Politico, and you don't ask, or because I would think that if they had asked and it wasn't answered, that would be included in the article. How do you not ask Kevin McCarthy, if she wins, will you refuse to seat her? If she wins, will there be a seat for her waiting in the House of Representatives? Because that's kind of an important question. Isn't it? I mean, I should think so. So they're denouncing her, but they're not saying that she has no place in that body. Because that might actually carry some weight with the weirdo voters in that bizarre district in Northwest Georgia. Okay? If the voters there, and it could be, it's a double-edged sword, I admit, but if the voters there knew that she would never be seated if she was elected, might it make them think twice about voting for her in the primary? God Almighty. Or are they just cantankerous and maggoty enough that they'd elect her just to spite them? I think this is a legitimate question. Yeah, Steve pointing out, Steve in New York, you know she's using to itch, you know she's just itching to use Ginger out loud. You know when the cameras are off, it flows freely from her lips. Of course it does. Because it would be politically correct for her not to, and she can't be politically correct. Mercy. Sorry, just dealing with a quick inquiry. Don't forget, says Jeremy in Vermont, don't forget Trump's first black friend, Ben Carson. Brilliant surgeon, sure. Otherwise, I guess he doesn't deserve to be here either. Oh, wait, Stephen New York says, oh, dear, dear Bob, you're pronunciating it wrong. It's political correct. Crack. Not to be mistaken with crick. Jesus. Hey, and now we started on the second 100 of yesterday's program. Thank you, Chaz, for getting us started. We got $90 to go to finish yesterday, and 200 for today. We'll get there. We'll keep chugging along. Thank you, Chaz. Thanks a ton for help making this program possible. Thank you. Now let's see here. You know, it frustrates me when we get to prayer meeting Wednesday and I somehow manage to not get any prayer meeting stuff in. It bums the little old blue-haired ladies out. Right, smart. After all, they're still cooking and They like to hear a little bit of religious instruction. Let's see. Because there are a couple of Lulus out there. Jim Dandies, as it were. And I was thinking in particular about a when I read this story, it immediately made me think of something that from a long, 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 long time ago. And in particular, what that was an old, old sketch from Saturday Night Live. We'll pick it up in medias res, and big thanks to Ron and Raleigh for helping me find it. We begin with a very, very young Bill Murray.
Bishop's conference, and just back from Mexico, where he had accompanied the papal entourage, is the gossip columnist for L'Osservatore Romano, the Vatican newspaper, Father Guido Sarducci. Nice to have you here, Father.
Thank you. Thank you.
That's a beautiful hat you have there.
Thank you. I got it in Mexico. Well, I think that the biggest story of the Bishop Conference in Mexico City is that thousands of pickpockets and swindlers have descended on that city to steal from the people who came to watch the Pope. Already, Mexico City policemen have arrested 2,000 people. Now, I'm not saying all the people down there are like this crooked, because I did meet some wonderful people. Met this one girl, Lupi is her name, and she was really nice. She drove me around and showed me the city. And also met this one fellow. He was from Guadalajara, Mexico. And he was a nice, he was really interested in the church. He knew a lot of stuff. And he told me he had this friend who had a lot of relics. And he thought maybe I would be interested in maybe looking and purchasing some. And a good thing it was with me, because it was hard. I never would have found it. You know, we was driving little streets and little alleyways and that. But it was fantastic, some of the stuff that this guy had. I'm telling you. One thing he had, or what he claimed anyway, was the high school graduation picture of a Jesus. That's right. But I was, you know, kind of shied away from it because, you know, how can you tell it to him, right? Because it was in a high school, you know, it was before he had the beard and the long hair and that. It was a real straight looking then, you know. Also, he had something, it was that was a bone, a femur bone, a big femur bone of St. Augustine. But I didn't get it because it was chipped. And something that I would have loved to bought, but I just couldn't afford it, was the bill for the Last Supper. Was it the actual check from the Last Supper, but he wanted the $50,000 for it, you know, was way out of my ball game. But he did have something, he brought it out later, he says that this is more in your category, I think, money-wise. And what it was a bill for the Last Brunch. I didn't even know there was a Last Brunch, you know, it was news to me, I went to the seminary, everything. But I did get it, and it's really something. And I know I didn't get it taken, because right here, it's the date. It says 4 April, year 33. It's so old. You know what? He wanted the $500 for this, but I Presbyterian him down to $200. Well, it says here all of the things that they had there for that brunch. And it's something. 12 large orange juice. 12 egg benedict. 12 lox and cream cheese. 12 home fries. 1 softball egg, 3 minutes. And then 12 coffee and 1 tea. Was probably the same guy as the softball egg. All together comes here to 155 shekels. That's what they used to call it, their money then. Shekels. And this is something. Down here, you can see somebody figured it out. They have like 13 divided into 155. And then it comes to like 11.92 shekels each. Well, you see what they did here? They made the guy that just had the egg and the tea pay as much as all of those that ate all of those things. That's right. And you see, even though this bill is almost 2,000 years old, there still is a lesson to be learned here. If you ever go out to eat in a restaurant with a big group, you know, brunch, dinner, whatever, always order the most expensive thing. This way, if they divide up the bill like they did here, you know, you won't get it taken advantage of. That's a little free tip that I give you for nothing, you know, free. Was more than wonderful talking with you. Arrivederci. Amen again.
Remains one of my favorite clips of all time from Saturday Night Live. And I share that for a reason, because, well, for starters, it's Prayer Meeting Wednesday. And just as we had the story last week of the Greek Orthodox Church that insisted that there was something magic about the spoon and the chalice, where they mix the wine and the bread and then stick the spoon in 100 different mouths and say that there's no way anybody could possibly get the Rona from that. Well, it turns out that the New York Times decided to spend some column inches on the religious relic business. And what used to be comedy in season four of Saturday Night Live, which is what, around 1979, maybe? Comedy about a simpleton priest who gets hoodooed into spending $200 on a phony bill for the last brunch. Well, that's what was comedy in 1979 is reality. And maybe it always has been. From the time that Constantine sent his mama, Helen, to the Holy Land to get her out of his hair and told her to go down and find some holy stuff. Mom, you know, you're into this Jesus thing. Why don't you go to Palestine and see if you can find some relics? And his mama, Constantine's mama, Helen, went about it with a will. And every street corner had some dude selling a piece of the true cross, you know, about 300 years later, because they just kept it around and hacked off little bits for people as, you know, crusaders, and they were into that kind of thing. Well, the crusaders are 700 years after that, but yeah, there were people who were into it. And you know, there's modern precedent too. Like I said, Agnes and I have been watching Deadwood, and so I have to go and do my hysterical research. And it turns out that the first headstone that was put up to Wild Bill Hickok had to be replaced because of all the tourists. It was made out of wood, and all these tourists were coming along and whittling little pieces off of his headstone till it wasn't a headstone anymore. Well, so too with the True Cross. So, as the New York Times points out, and what a bargain, for a little more than $2,000, you yourself can own, I'm not kidding, an itsy bitsy little silver plated case that contains, no, really, some hair of the Virgin Mary. Mm-hmm. And for a little more than that, there's a wax-sealed reliquary for sale that have pieces of the garments worn by Saints Peter and Paul, which has a little bit of irony in it, too, because those two despised each other. It's part of the reason that Saul of Tarsus had to take it on the lamb, because he didn't get along with Pete. And it even comes with a piece of paper written in Latin that tells you that this is a, no kidding, really and for true, authentic relic of clothing worn by Saints Peter and Paul. Now, that's for the small fry. You remember how the bill for the Last Supper was $50,000? Well, for $16,750, the simple among us can get a multi-chambered reliquary containing 50 of the most important relics in Christendom. You get little pieces of folks like John the Baptist and Saint Benedict. But that's only if you've got $16,750 to put into it. Has anybody talked to that asshole named Green from what is it, Hobby Lobby or Michaels or whatever it is? Because he went all over the Middle East in the aftermath of our slaughter of the innocent people of Iraq, buying up sacred relics and things to prove the Bible's real. And he was going to build him a Bible museum. And then it turned out all the shit that he spent all that money on and broke the law bringing into the United States, well, they all turned out to be fake. Yeah. A little less coin will get you a piece of the true cross soaked in the blood of Jesus, course, it might actually be a piece of the headstone of Wild Bill Hickok soaked in a little bit of Heinz ketchup, but it's not like you're going to taste it or anything. Nails used in the crucifixion. You know, you'd think those would be a lot more expensive, but it's just a few little filings, iron filings, and they're and they've been worked into another piece of iron to be like a really old looking ancient nail. You can even get one of those little beanies that the popes wear. When a pope wears it, I don't know if it's still a yarmulke. I don't think it is, but it's the same principle. And the best part is, one of the people selling this garbage says you will not there will the all sales are final with no returns due to the sacredness of this item. And all of this shit is on where? Of course, eBay. Mm-hmm. Ah, thank you. Steve knows his Roman Catholicism. The little Pope beanie is called a zucchetto. Well, thank you, Steve. The quantum of my knowledge has been increased. One of the more fascinating aspects of all of this is that a lot of this stuff has been preserved over the centuries as sacred relics in Roman Catholic churches. But over the course of the last 3 years, the New York Times reports, thefts from those churches have gone through the ceiling, because Europe is, and it's only taken 2,000 years, slowly getting away from the toxicity that is the church. And so there are churches out there that aren't particularly well guarded, and people can go in and steal the Virgin Mary's hair, and the next thing you know, it's on eBay. Mm-hmm. On average, there are more than 300 relics boosted out of Italy every year since 2010. Yeah, oh, for pity's sakes. I kept reading the article, waiting to find that somebody was offering the, and that's what reminded me of the clip, offering the check for the last brunch. Shekels. Because, well, P.T. Barnum understood the church very well. He is alleged, although he may not have said it, he is alleged to have remarked that there's a sucker born every minute. And the church wants to make sure that they get hold of them early. And not even in the pervy way, but that too. Ugh. So we got that. And, you know, okay, so that's a little bit funny. But as is always the case with Prayer Meeting Wednesday, there's the funny. And then there's the outright vile and evil. Curiously, vile and evil are anagrams of each other? Just like dog and God. Makes you think. Santa and Satan. I've been awarded a cowbell by Lee in New York. Thefts have been going through the ceiling. Give yourself a cowbell for the pun, in whether you intended it or not. Well, again, I put these little things out there from time to time just to see if anybody's paying attention. Let's go to Poland, or not, where the president, the right-wing neo-fascist president of Russia, is a dude named, well, Duda. Andre Duda, who has gone on a personal crusade against the LGBTQ community in Poland. Remember how Marjorie Greene there said, "Why, oh, them Muslims, they don't like the gay." I dare say, and I was talking about Europe slowly coming out from under the grips of Christianity and secularizing. Well, more Western Europe than Eastern, because probably still the single most Roman Catholic country in Europe is Poland. And, of course, it being deeply religious, more often than not, goes hand in hand with despising the LGBTQ community. And so it is that we find Polish President Andrzej Duda, the Duda, they call him there, although he's not nearly as cool or laid back. For a while there, after the fall of Polish communism, Poland tried to align itself and be more like the European liberal democracies to the West. But it's one step forward and two steps back. And so it is that hatred, just as it is in Mother Russia, hatred of the LGBTQ community is sickeningly on the rise. And so the Duda is campaigning for office. And apparently it sells real big time to tell the illiterati, the electorate in Poland, or a majority thereof. You know, it's probably a lot like Trump's following. Not enough to form a majority, but enough to do a shit ton of damage. And so the Duda decided to unburden himself on his thoughts on being gay. It did not, well, it went well for him, but it does not speak well for Poland. Up on the stump, he declared, "This is not why my parents' generation for 40 years struggled to expel communist ideology from schools." Wait, I thought he was going to talk about gay. Oh, dear. "So that it could not be foisted on children, could not brainwash and indoctrinate them," the Duda said. "They did not fight so that we would now accept that another ideology, even more destructive to man, would come along, an ideology which, under the cliches of respect and tolerance, hides deep intolerance." He's talking about gay people and basic civil rights for the LGBT community. Much as did huggable, snuggleable, cuddleable, lovable Vlad Putin did, the Duda, about a week ago, signed a family charter of proposals for his candidacy. And in that document, he promised to keep gay couples from marrying or adopting children, and promise to ban anybody teaching about any LGBT issues in schools. Jesus, I guess all of Poland's other problems are solved. Like the fact that when the American president goes to visit there, they wave Confederate flags because they can't wave swastikas. Provinces in Poland are declaring themselves free from LGBT ideology. The problem with all of this is that 16 years ago, Poland was allowed into the European Union. And the European Union expressly they expressly state non-discrimination as an element of the EU. And so the EU executive, in writing to those heads of five Polish provinces, sort of reminded them that they have a duty to guarantee non-discrimination as a core EU value. Then there's the Catholic Archbishop of Krakow, Marek Jędrzejewski, who declared back last August, "The red pestilence no longer marches across our land, but a new neo-Marxist one has appeared, which seeks to conquer spirits, hearts, and minds, not red, but rainbow. The greatest tolerance becomes the height of intolerance when violence, humiliation, and sneers against sacred symbols issue from mouths proclaiming fairness." Isn't Auschwitz in Poland? Isn't language just like that, cloaked in terms religious, how we got an Auschwitz? Pretty sure it is. So it's not just us. Fascism is on the march all over the world, and it must be opposed all over. Lest the curse grow and overcome us all. Marjorie Greene has nothing to do with Chick-fil-A except for the fact that she probably loves their stuff. Marjorie Greene, running for Congress in the 14th District of Georgia. Ill. And so we come to the end of the program. And thanks so much to those of you who jumped in to help us knock down a little over half of yesterday's fundraising. Thank you so much. Like I said, it's going to take everything we can raise to get all the bills paid for this month, for the rest of the month. No, seriously, though, thank you all. When we get to tomorrow, we will be at 590, unless something changes with the overnight crew. So thank you all for for keeping the hole from getting any deeper than it is. Thanks to all of you who share your precious finite time engaging in the program, no matter the manner you might choose. Thank you. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to Steve from Georgistan, all-around great guy in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thank you to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. 20 plus years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Stay safe. Stay home if you can. Wash your hands. Wear your mask. Wear your gloves. Don't touch your face. Keep social distance. If you see somebody not wearing a mask, assume that they're probably a maggot and treat them like the plague, because they are. Because they're just spewing virus, potentially spewing virus particles hither, thither, and yon. We want to keep this family together. And safe and healthy. Thanks for the kind words, Todd in South Carolina, Stan. You're on fire. Do you intend to spontaneously combust? At least put some ribs on the acorn before your demise. So sad. Thank you, Todd. Oh, there's a great question coming from Sparky. If 50,000 people get COVID-19 at a Trump rally, is that a clandemic? Nice to end on a cowbell. Later, y'all.